Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Late nights at work taking a toll on your skin? Do you find yourself staring at those dark circles in the mirror? Well, it's time to meet your new best friend, Dark Circle Defense Balm from Lumen. Lumen is a line of brilliant men's skincare solutions crafted especially for men who want to look and feel their brightest. Whether you're a seasoned skincare pro or a total newbie, Lumen Skin has got you covered. Lumen's Dark Circle Defense Balm is a lightweight gel that absorbs seamlessly into your skin to brighten your under eyes and instantly plump dehydration lines. It's basically an espresso shot for your eyes. The best part? Lumen will let listeners of this podcast try the product out for free. Yes, you heard that right. Free. Head to lumenskin.com/wondery and get your free trial of Dark Circle Defense and their other amazing products now. Say goodbye to tired-looking eyes and say hello to a new and refreshed you. Don't wait any longer. Your skin will thank you. That's lumenskin.com/wondery for your free trial.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 412.
Really? That's what you're going with?
Hey, guys. 412. Can you believe it? How many podcasts have you done, lazy?
Good read.
Thank you.
Is that how you start James Bonding?
No. We start that by going, Matt, and then we lose it after that because we don't have a theme song.
Chris, Matt, and Jonah, Chris, Matt, or Chris and Jonah, Chris, Matt, Katie.
Favorite holiday.
Kyle is sitting and laughing in the background. Ha, ha, ha.
God damn it. If you have this on your hard drive, you're probably going to want to back it up with Carbonite.
We're not ready for the sponsorship.
Oh, I like to jump into that. I'm such a salesman.
See, this is my problem for not having you guys in more intros is that you don't know how intros work.
Yeah,
I'm not in this intro.
Thanks, Jonah. Is Bruce Gutter in this intro? Hey, Bruce, where's this intro?
I don't know where Bruce is.
Oh, but you always... It's weird.
Yeah,
we've seen you guys together.
It's always an idea. Hold on, I'll go get him.
Go out onto the patio.
Yes?
Where's this intro, Bruce?
What intro?
The intro to this podcast you're on,
Bruce. That hipster just told me to come up here.
Bruce... Why, that's our friend Jonah.
I'm from a different time. It's what I use.
I know, but like, why? I guess
he's a piece of shit.
Oh boy! Oh boy!
Guys, who's the guest today?
Ken Marino.
Oh, Ken Marino. That was a really fun podcast. You know why? This guy wasn't there. That was mean. I didn't mean that.
Joe Ray.
I wish he was here.
Joe Ray.
Jonah was off being Jonah.
Matt Meyer and I will be performing at the 27th of September at the Wilbur Theater.
Hopefully you got this early.
Come to that.
And you're in the greater Boston area.
That's right.
And there are tickets left, because I don't think there are tickets left.
What? There's still some tickets.
Someone said online that they got the last four tickets.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, it's probably not true. You probably got the last four together.
Yeah, maybe that's what
it is. So if you're a loner like me, go by yourself.
Go by yourself. Get a grab yourself a lobster roll and then head over to the Wilbur.
Oh, have a good time. Have a good time.
Well, if you really do want to buy tickets for something, you could buy tickets to my appearance Thursday, October 3rd at Stand Up Live in Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix, Arizona, everybody. Stand Up Live is a great club.
I'll be doing one show that night, so come on out and support me.
One show, Jonah.
And then
one and done.
Yeah, one and done, and then that, and then later on in the month, I'm going to be at the San Francisco Punchline doing a whole weekend of shows, October 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Well, where did Bruce go? It was like when it was time to promote shows, Bruce got real quiet.
Yeah, sorry, I fell asleep.
I hope
the droning voice of that asshole. I can't stand it.
I like the internal struggle that must be going on, because they don't get along.
Let's just say I have a hard time staying up by my own means.
I like to think that there's a Bruce Banner thing that happens.
That hack! Get out of here with that shit.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite.
Oh my god, Carbonite's so great. If you want to back something up.
Yo, and I always like it when things back things
Whoa!
Up.
Whoa! Multiple characters have shown up today.
Yo, chicks, if you got Carbonite, you can back that up.
Wow.
Listen to P.T. Jonah. That's the radio-friendly version of that character.
It's way better than the PT Cruiser.
By the way, I think
PT Cruiser is the gay version of PT Jonah.
I think we'll I think we'll all agree that Pussy Talking Barnum put on a great circus. Yo, you want to see tigers, yo? Yo, yeah. Siamese yeah. twins, yo, Siamese, yo. Yeah.
Y'all want to see a bearded lady?
Come on, yo.
I can't wait to see Pussy
How many,
Pussy
how many beards you want to see, yo? You want to see the South beard?
Yeah, I like what you're saying there.
Anyway, if you perhaps lost any of this information, if you lost any of this information and you wanted to retrieve it,
yeah,
you know, should back up your computer
absolutely.
With Carbonite.
Let me tell you how many times.
How many times?
I have been at a Genius Bar talking to someone.
Well, on which side?
Both sides. Who did not back that shit up.
And what happens?
It's a very easy step.
Then they lose it.
They lose their lives. And you know how much data recovery can cost? Well, it's not cheap. Starts at about $500 and goes up from there.
Well, that's why you can have plans that start at $59 a year at Carbonite.com.
$59 a year? That's such a bargain.
It's a better backup plan. With the offer code Nerdist, you get 2 bonus months with purchase.
Wait, so you're telling me?
2!
14 months?
14 months!
That's a good deal.
You could have a baby and then have it be 5 months old.
Well, you could have a baby, plop it out, and have another baby that
you
was kind of
preemie. You could get pregnant again in that time.
No, I'm saying you could have 2 children by that point. The second one will be premature, but with medical technology the way it is right now, it's probably going to make it. So why don't you try to have 2 babies, make a backup for your first baby.
Back up those babies.
That's how you do it with Carbonite.
With Carbonite.com. Right? Use the offer code Nerdist.
Yeah.
This episode is Ken Marino.
Ken's a great guy.
Ken is good. I've known Ken since the old MTV days. Ken, of course, was on The State. He's been in a million other things. You've seen him all over the place. And but he does have a film out now called Bad Milo, which Ken also responsible, one of the people responsible for Burning Love, which is an hilarious show.
Who's clapping? Is that Bruce? Is that Pete? What's he talking, Jonah?
I don't clap.
Oh.
Why are you arguing with PT Jonah?
Yo, it just doesn't like me.
You guys aren't
I once misplaced the cocaine. I put it in the front.
Aww, well, that's where the pussy is.
I know. That's what I was trying to get.
Ken Marino's movie is called Bad Milo. It's available on VOD now in theaters October 4th. Nerdist Podcast number 412. Ken Marino.
Check it.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Who is this guy? Who is this guy?
Ken is
nobody important. Don't worry,
Ken's
please.
A, show you on. Ken's Burning Love, which is amazing. You can catch cool. it online right. and on E.
That's right.
Also, one of the founding members of The State on
Ken's
MTV.
Been in a million, oh, cool. Ken's right, been in a million so things.
This too many things to talk about. Nothing very exciting.
I apologize for knowing that off the bat.
No, you're an astronaut. You should only We got to worry about get up, dude. What do you think? Coming down safe. Don't worry about anything else.
Very nice meeting you.
Good to
nice
see you, man.
You too. And we enjoy you breaking your Living Dead stuff or whatever.
Oh, the Walking Dead Talking Dead stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So my son got into this summer. We watched like the whole series pretty yeah. much online.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
And we really enjoyed watching your talk show.
Oh,
after.
Thanks, man.
You did stuff with Breaking Bad as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we really enjoyed all that stuff.
It's been, two episodes of that left.
So congratulations.
Thanks,
on
man.
All that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I mean,
congratulations on
I'll start watching your show too, I promise.
Listen, don't worry about
it. Now that I know you. But, I usually rely on my kids to give me my.
Yeah, 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 to tell you what's
to tell me what's what.
Yep.
Your kids will know.
Yeah, so they, they'll be. The reason I was asking
yeah.
is because they'll probably be really excited that I met you.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, I gotta catch a plane.
Pleasure, good to see pleasure. You, man. Take
see
care.
You, man. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Oh, that was fun.
That's the best way to have an awkward should I know you.
Great. How you doing, man?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
That was really funny. Was it? I mean, it's not. Listen, Kent. Ken, you're amazing at what you do, but it's really funny. It was like, I'm an astronaut. What do you do? I'm an actor.
I didn't even want
to
say it.
That's all you can do.
What am I going to say?
What would I know you from? Don't worry about me. Well, don't worry about me.
My first response was, I'm not an astronaut. I was like, I don't know what to say.
I might play an astronaut in a sketch or
I played many different important jobs.
In a TV show.
I've saved lives on TV.
Or whatnot. Ken Marino. I've known Ken since the early 90s.
Right. Am I putting these on?
Yeah, sure, if you want.
Are we keeping that? Oh,
that's yep, done. Lord, look at that. We move quick. Set.
We know this shit works.
Five quick turnover here. Ahead of me.
I have known Ken since the early 90s, and I remember being at an MTV Spring Break or something, and the State was there, and you guys were doing a live something or other. Like, yes. They had you guys doing live stuff.
It was the only thing we were ever invited to, and we were never invited again. we didn't fit in. We felt very weird. And they're like, do some sketches or, you know, about spring break. And we're like, okay. Sure.
By the way, here's what you have to understand about an MTV spring break. It is in the middle of the day. There are drunk people everywhere. It's like a festival. It's like a music festival in a weird sort of way. They do not focus for comedy jokes.
No. They want like some music and some people dancing around so they can drink and dance around.
They want topless people and drunk people. Like they just
There are 10 guys in the group, so we were topless most of the time.
They don't want to hear references to the outtakes from Cannonball Run.
Well, you know, we actually did. We did Shakespeare.
Did you?
We did a sketch that we did when we were at college called Hard on Shaky Willy. And basically it was a scene from Macbeth and just straight up a scene from Macbeth. But each time somebody came out, we were all in tights. And each time somebody came out, they had a larger erection or just a larger penis.
Sounds like Tom. Who wrote that?
You know, I think Craig Wedren suggested that we do it a long time ago, and then we did. It starts off with, like, you know, just straight up Shakespeare, and then, like, Showalter turns around, he's got, like, a little erection. And then each person until Carrie comes out with, like, a big dick wrapped around her leg.
It's pretty – when you think about – I don't know if people understand how big the State, like the group of people. It was a large sketch comedy group.
A lot of people. It was a small country. It was a lot of people. There were 11 people in it, and so it's amazing actually that most of us are still kind of working in this town. I was just talking to Showalter about it.
Showalter
just moved out here.
Mike Black. Tom Lennon,
Ben Garant,
Ben
Latrulio,
Jerry Latrulio, like it's Kevin Allison still does stuff. Like,
Michael Patrick Jan, David Wayne,
David. Oh my God! I mean, it's kind of amazing.
It's a crazy group of people, and I'm just really happy that everybody's still working.
Yeah,
paying their bills.
I'm working with Tom and Ben on a show, and so I see them all the time.
That's right. That's right. For Comedy Central.
For Comedy Central, yeah. And I see Carrie. I run into Carrie every once in a while. Carrie Kinney is one of the funniest fucking people. Like just in person, I always feel like I don't have enough comedy skills to keep up with her.
Carrie is, you know, like people back then. People were like, "Wow, why do you only have one girl in the group?" And we're like, "We got Carrie. We don't need any." Buddy else, she does it all. She's hysterical. Of course, the other answer was that she ate every other girl who was in the group. But she's just the funniest. She's the funniest.
Did you ever see her band play? She had a band called Cake Like.
Yeah, Cake Like, yeah.
Yeah, which was a really good band.
They were great. I mean, they knew like three or four notes, right?
It was enough.
Yeah.
And then they just dressed really sexy, and then they sang awesome. And Craig Wedren actually produced all of their albums or a couple of their albums, and they're great.
Some other ties to the comedy community that people may not know is that Steve Agee was your tenant for a long time.
Steve Agee rented the bottom part of my house out for a good number of years. He was great. He was a great tenant to have. He slept late. He didn't make a lot of noise. Paid his rent on time, mostly. And then he came up and he would play Santa when we had kids.
Not during Christmas.
In the middle of the year. Yeah, and it wasn't our kids. They weren't our kids.
They were just kids over. You guys had some kids over.
Yeah, he always played vacationing Santa with the hat but the Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the other thing that I remember about, because Ken, you were a guy that I haven't really like regularly auditioned for things in like 5 years because I just couldn't take it anymore. Like yeah. the pilot season and the, I just wasn't emotionally built for it.
Well, it's a terrible process.
It's a really awful process. But I always was happy to see you at auditions. And I yes. remember seeing you at one audition when we were and you're like fixing up a house. Put a bidet in. It's yeah. the greatest thing I've ever done in
yeah,
my life.
Yeah, there's life before a bidet and after a bidet. And anybody who hasn't used a bidet, like when people are like, guys, just
take a day bidet.
Yeah, day bidet.
If you I need a bidet right now.
If you haven't used a bidet, and you make fun of it, you should step back for a second and like go find it, search out and find a bidet and use it, and then tell me if it's stupid.
If you're crazy.
It's a fabulous invention.
After you use one, your brain goes, if you had not used this, you would be a filthy animal.
That's right. That's right.
It's so good at cleaning your ass.
You know what? I put in, you know, like the old, like an Italian bidet, like where you kind of like adjust the, you know, you got the big handles and it shoots up and you got.
Oh, I thought it was one that just goes, hey, man, wash that shit off your ass.
Hey, what are you doing up there? Clean that shit off your ass. then I got.
You got a real dirty this time.
Hey, what's the matter, you? I
told you, a layoff of the meatballs.
Then I got a layoff of the dingleberries. I got one of those Toto ones, Japanese ones, that have a little control on the side of your wall, and everything's electronic, and so you sit on the seat, and then like you press a thing to clean your ass, and then a little arm comes out, and then shoots, and it oscillates, and it pulsates.
Does it tickle?
It doesn't tickle. It doesn't finish off. It's not. But it's but it's got soft spray and hard spray, and then you can control the water and the temperature of your seat. And if you don't have that, it costs $800.
Now, when you
just don't go out for a little while, save some money, and get a Toto bidet.
Now, do you not
wash your ass?
Do you refuse to shit in hotels because you're like, well, there's no bidet?
No, I shit wherever I have to shit. But when I wipe my ass, you know, I think about like, oh man, I'd rather be home with like warm water.
This isn't what this should be.
But that makes the second he goes home and takes a shit that much more rewarding.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Also, you know, when you have like diarrhea. Right? Like,
Yeah.
I mean, if we're going schedule,
let's take it there.
I don't even want to joke about it. It's like you don't want to just keep wiping your ass.
Right.
Right? But if you have a bidet, it's actually you.
It makes diarrhea pleasant.
It really does. It reinvents the whole idea.
So there's no hand wiping with a bidet whatsoever. It's just
you can towel dry.
I mean, you got to dry it off. Yeah.
You can dry, but the Japanese one I have has a blow dryer.
Oh, well, that's good. Does it tease the hairs on the?
It combs them out.
Yeah.
You get a little Brazilian blow dry.
Literal cornrows.
Just ties a Hello Kitty bow to it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really nice to make everything adorable.
Yeah, in Japanese.
I mean, I'm sorry that we went like we're talking about shit a lot. But it is actually at some point we can. Use that as a segue into
your charity work.
The charity work that I did.
No, because I just feel like I brought it up because I remember you describing it to me, and you were so sincere about like no, you, and I think you were sort of expecting people to laugh. You're like, no, you don't understand. It's like the greatest thing.
It's the best.
And I really sort of picture the way you describe it going, yeah, if you had a thing like that that slightly elevated your quality of life every day, it would put you in a better mood.
I describe it to people this way because they're like, is it real? Does it really clean your ass? Let me put it this way. You're walking down a street in your sneakers, right? And they got the little ridges in them.
Yeah.
And you step in some dog shit.
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you take a piece of paper and try to wipe it off, or do you get a fucking high powered hose and spray that shit out of those little nooks and crannies?
Yeah, yeah,
that's what you.
And what's the more sanitary thing to do?
Yes, our butts are basically shoes that have stepped in shit.
That's right. Our anuses are the soles of sneakers. That's my point.
And that's right.
No, really. So you're are you gonna put one in your house?
No, there's no place for it in the bathroom.
You don't have a toilet?
I do have a toilet.
You can the beauty of the Japanese seat is you just put it on the toilet.
You don't need the toilet. You just get the seat.
Yeah. Oh God. Why are we still here?
Yeah. I don't know.
Guys, let's go. Okay, it's done. I'm gonna do it.
You know what I'm talking about.
I'm gonna do it.
I'm gonna
do it.
It's great.
It's delightful.
Nothing better than at night, a warm toilet seat.
It's civilized.
I can afford that.
Yeah. You
just
can.
Just don't like go out and get a couple of like crazy dinners one month.
It's like,
oh, I could do both.
You make that before you.
I can't.
I could have the crazy dinners and then wash them out of my ass with my high-tech Japanese toilet.
You make that before you get to your first Talking Dead hashtag. You're like, boom, bidet. Hashtag, what happened to Andy Lincoln?
Why is the hashtag for the Walking Dead tonight bidet?
Hashtag bidet.
I don't know why it's happening. But I always got the sense that you were a very good auditioner and that you were very good in a room. And I was never good in a room, really, because I could never figure out like where to make the small talk and be charming, try to be charming, and then make the transition into doing the scene.
Yeah.
And then just immediately get into whatever the scene is going to be, because, you know, they're very flatly reading on the other end, and you just constantly feel judging eyes upon you.
Yeah. I don't know if I was good at it. I mean, I got better at it. I didn't like it at first, and then I realized, like, the more, and this is no big secret, but the more you don't give a shit, but the better your audition. The more you, like, just go in and, like...
Like you're a man with a bidet.
You're like you're a man with a bidet. No, if you walk in and you're, like, you just continue being the guy who was talking to his friends out in the room, and, you know, then they get a sense of who you are, and they don't give a shit, like, ultimately about, like, getting every line right, and if they do, then you're not right for it. Anyway, so I just started going in and, like, not caring, and then for some reason that helped. But you can't not care too much, because then they read that too. I don't know. It's
a
weird thing.
You can't engineer not caring. You really do have to let it go.
You really just don't have to.
There's a perfect level
of
apathy you need.
It's true.
Just sort of like...
So that certainly helped me when I was like, I don't fucking care anymore. I don't care. I'm just going to do the... I'm just going to just be me, a version of me, and then if they don't like it, fuck them.
How many pilots do you think you've done?
I don't know.
It's a lot, right?
Well, I do know. I came out in 97, and I shot basically one a year.
Wow.
And, you know, a couple went. There was a couple of years I didn't shoot them because I did Party Down.
Yeah.
And then I was shooting Wanderlust or something one year, so I didn't do it. But I then shot one of those mid-season weird ones, but they don't. You know, I've shot so many that don't go that I don't even know. I black it all out. I don't think about it. I was just talking to somebody about that today. I don't remember any. I try not to remember anything. Otherwise, I would lose my shit. But what's happened is it's bled into my personal life, and I don't remember a lot of things. As a survival thing, and now in my personal life, I don't remember like experiences.
Well,
it could be the drugs that I took in.
Oh, it could be that. It could be the drugs. But it also could be that you really do have to condition yourself to become emotionally detached from this business, because you just have to. You just have to. It's so much rejection that even though someone goes like, oh, well, that's not hard work, like, yeah, but, you know, we are communal beings, and to be rejected is just sort of flies in the face of what our survival instinct wants. And so to constantly be rejected in to make money to survive is a really intense process.
It's intense, and it's not like you're going in there and playing a saxophone, and they go, I don't like how you're playing your saxophone, or I don't like...
Just don't do whatever that is.
Right. They're essentially saying, you're not it. You're not good, or you're not the thing we wanted, and you're like, well, I was brought in because I was sort of the guy, but I'm not the guy you want. Okay, so... And then it's like you put it all on yourself, and you're like, oh, I'm not good enough somehow, and that's... And that
can be bad, and I think that's one of the reasons why performers can have such rocky relationships, because if you condition yourself to become detached with work, it's hard not to bring some of that home, or it's hard not to get, you know, like, I feel like a lot of us can be very protective because we are naturally hypersensitive, which is why we're performers and why we're able to sort of re-express things into the world. But then you have to get super protective. Because that, you know, a lot of times, particularly in relationships, that hypersensitivity can really work against you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But things are good right now.
Oh, good. Do you want to talk about it?
No, I'm fine. Everything's good. My wife is good. My kid's good.
Do you remember what pilot you did? Where you were like, oh fuck, this one's gonna go. How could this not one go? This one not go? And then,
No.
Nothing.
No. I mean, I shot. I shot a thing. A remake of Eddie's Father.
Courtship of Eddie's Father.
The Courtship of Eddie's Father was called the remake was Eddie's Father.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, this is
were
cute.
You the
this
Bill Bixby character?
Yeah. Yeah. But you know who the son was? The kid in Hunger Games. What's his name? Josh.
Blonde handsome?
Josh Sexman.
Hutchinson.
Hutchinson.
Yeah, he's in everything. He's like, now he's like the dude in that movie. And back then he was like my little son.
Now you can still intimidate him in public because you have this weird father-son bond.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can still unhinge him.
He won't remember me. He's a huge star.
Well, he'll be like, Ken, I blocked it out. I block out all my family.
You say we work together. Exactly. I can't say that we didn't.
I remember in that pilot they shot like a 50-50 shot of me talking to my son. And I have a nose on me. And it was a profile of my nose and then like a profile of my son and his nose. And I was like, oh, there's no way we're related. Like he's got a small nose and my nose is taking up a good 2/3 of the, of the screen. I think that's why they didn't pick it up.
I remember
our noses didn't match.
I remember doing a show with you at UCB that was really fun, which was, what was it? Shit Show? I think it was Rob Hubel's show where you bring in things that you've worked on. You bring in like the worst stuff. I brought in, I did a pilot for Fox in like 2000 maybe. And it was pretty forward thinking at the time because they wanted to have a show that was interactive with the audience.
Right.
Like in terms of like, you know, call in to vote or email in to vote or whatever. So the idea was, it was called Battle of the Sitcoms, and they would shoot mini versions of sitcoms.
Right.
And then I think
you were the host of it. No,
Brian Unger was the host.
Right.
And I was on one of the mini sitcoms.
Right.
And so and Troy Miller, director of episode, who's great. Troy Miller did, you know, like Tenacious D and a bunch of really, he's Troy's great. And so Mr. Show. And so but what happened was all of the mini sitcoms were written by comedy writers who were making fun of sitcoms.
Right.
And so what you had were, you had these shows that were satirizing sitcoms, but then just kind of looked like bad sitcoms. Like our mini sitcom was called Split Down the Middle,
okay.
And our last names were Split. It was my brother and I, my friend Larry, this guy Larry Alexander. I don't know if you know Larry, but so the idea was, it was that classic sitcom device of roommates get in an argument, so they divide the room. Mm-hmm. Very Happy Daisy premise.
Right.
And it's like, okay, fine. This is your side, and that's my side.
Right.
Oh, shit, the toilet's on your side. Sorry. Well, maybe if you let
me use
the phone.
You're going to have to shit in the couch.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so it was basically, that was ours. And
you'll be sorry. I'm putting in a bidet on my side.
Ken Marino.
Call back.
And then, one of the other ones was like, I think the one we lost to was like, a sitcom about the president being a 10-year-old. So
of course you lose to
do you
that.
Remember, yeah. Do you remember what mine was?
Yes, I do remember. It was Olive Garden commercial.
Tony Roma ribs.
Tony Roma.
My Tony Roma ribs commercial.
Yeah, it was Tony Roma ribs.
I was the spokesperson for Tony Roma ribs, and then we did like a series of commercials where I'm like this obnoxious guy, and I had the fucking the haircut, yeah. Like hairs, and like ripped in front of your face.
It was kind
like
of that
early
like,
Friends haircut, like it's like.
But it was born out of that Friends, like it was that '90s, like it was almost like America was just discovering a specific kind of Chandler snark.
Yeah, it was
and
really
so
snarky.
It was like, hey. It were almost like all the emotion of
could
it was
these
like,
ribs be any more delicious?
Exactly.
Eat ribs. Yeah. You're a fucking idiot.
Like, ask my mother. And then I'd hold a picture of me and my like grandmother drag. So terrible.
Oh my God. Is that real?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I feel like somehow like Funny or Die or someplace has it. It's like on something.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, where did you get that? Like I had a VHS tape of it, but like it hasn't aired in many, many years. But I guess you can get every, what am I talking about?
Tom Lennon did one that was like an industrial film about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something, but it's just like young Tom Lennon kind of doing the same thing in his bedroom talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was such a fun show to do.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah,
and
yeah.
We all like it. Just you can't not laugh. It's so much fun.
The best thing though, right? Weird Al was at that one.
Yeah,
right?
Al was. Yeah, yeah.
And he showed like a talk show he did in Japan.
It was, yeah.
Where they brought out like giant people, like people dressed in giant crab outfits.
It was right when Eat It broke. And so it was basically their, it wasn't SNL, but it was their version of SNL. It was like their big Japanese sketch show. And so they had him come out and sing Eat It.
My mind just broke thinking about Japanese people having to first understand English enough to know what Beat It is,
right,
and then having to have a better grasp of the vocabulary to know what Eat It is.
He's saying part of it in Japanese.
Oh, it all makes sense.
So he's saying part of it in Japanese, I believe, and I'm sure this is on YouTube somewhere. And so he's describing this experience, and he goes, and then all of a sudden, a guy came out dressed as a lobster,
right,
and yelled at him to eat him. Right. And then there were these,
so they
like
completely understood.
And so he didn't. So then they interviewed him afterwards, and Al was like, and Al does this thing where he does this crazy pratfall where I think he might have hurt himself, but he jumps. They just start talking at him, and he doesn't know what to do. So he just jumps and just lands on the floor and does like a crazy pratfall. It's really weird. He said it was the strangest thing he had ever. He had no idea what he
and
was doing.
Weird Al to say that's the strangest thing.
That's a very big deal. But that was a fun show. So how long were you a ribs bitch?
I did 2 days on it. I shot 2 days. I shot all the commercials. I shot them out. They paid me for the year.
Nice.
And that was it.
Now, Ken, how close was this to you being the face of the Rock and Roller Coaster?
That was around the same time. This is all 97, 98. It's exact when I came out here. My manager was like, got this rib offer. I was like, I'll take it.
So much of us benefited from Matthew Perry. Like, oh, yeah. We were the runoff of Matt. Like, if you were like a snarky white guy in the mid-90s, you owe a lot of your work to Matt Perry being Chandler. Because everyone was like, we need a Chandler type. And we were those guys who were like, hey, we're this sort of like, you know.
We're going to kind
of
comment on it. Yeah. But do it. We'll do it. But
you
we'll
know
also
who else Ben admitted?
Snarky but non-threatening.
Vicodin dealers.
Oh, Matt Myra,
I'm sorry. It's fun to remember when you watch Friends and
could
see
you be any more of a cocky?
No, but it's very funny when you, because on the Rock and Roller Coaster, I don't know if you've, last time you've been on the Aerosmith Rock and Roller
Coaster. I have not been on it yet, but I know that I'm
you have
a,
not
a
been
big,
on it?
Big part of it. I haven't been to Disney
Blasphemous!
World. This I'm into
ridiculous.
Disney World.
If I was on a ride video,
next you're going to tell me you never ate Tony Roma's ribs.
I have. I don't know if I have.
The premise is you go, they put you through the queue, and then you end up, you're at this record studio, and he is the sound engineer for Aerosmith's
I got a call,
sweet, sweet record.
And they said, they need you for a day to be the sound engineer for Aerosmith. We're going to shoot this thing. It's a roller coaster at Disney World. That is an Aerosmith themed roller coaster, and what they're going to do is they're going to shoot this thing while you're waiting in line of a video of them that's going to look like they're really there, and you're the sound guy, and they come in, and Ileana Douglas is their manager, and then a limo pulls up and takes them away, but they're like, hey, have a good time on the roller coaster, and then they leave, and I'm just there doing the sound. I don't say anything.
He doesn't say a word.
They did one for Euro Disney where I had like a couple of lines. I don't know if it's there in Euro Disney.
I'll have to find out.
Zachary Blue Aerosmith.
So I've been however long that ride's been around, I have been the guy working the soundboard while Aerosmith was behind me. And I just remember having a really good conversation with what's his head from Aerosmith,
Steven Tyler
about flossing. But they said, hey, here's a little bit of money, tiny bit of money. Do you want to do this? And I was like, to be in something with Aerosmith and Ileana Douglas? Sure. And so I went, and they're like, okay, so you're working a soundboard. You're going to be looking in these like very, very strong lights. We're going to get you these super dark contacts so you don't get blinded by it. I'm like, what? Because they're like, they're very, very bright lights because they were shooting like IMAX.
Oh, okay.
IMAX like quality film or something, but then they're making it small, so they had to light it some weird way to make it seem.
And so I
just stared at lights for like 12 hours that day.
It's really spectacular. Guys. It's funny when I walk in there because you know my parents live in Florida, so
yeah.
If I hit up,
you
the
spent
rock and
eight
roller
days here. Disney World.
Well, I was visiting my family for part of that, but you know.
Were visiting your family for like an hour, and then the rest of the time you were at Epcot and Walt Disney World.
Well, his is Disney Hollywood Studios. It's a different park, Chris.
Totally different park.
Four magical parks in one place. I mean, what's wrong with it?
I guess
nothing.
There's nothing wrong
with it. Everything's great there. Two water parks. I didn't even count those.
You could have just, like, you could go to Disney World for 4 days.
Yeah, I'm listening.
And then just see another part of the country.
Well, why would I do that? I travel enough when we do the road.
And Epcot
stuff.
Has every part of the country, yeah. Every part of the world, really. Yeah,
so there's something so does Vegas, the other place you go all the time.
Well, Vegas is a 4.5-hour drive.
You like going to mini cities. You like going to, you like, you want to, you know, your perfect world would be to live in a diorama of all.
Oh, fuck yeah. I like recreations of things. I don't like the original things.
The original things are really too old.
Yeah.
They're going to fall apart. They probably smell dirty. The new stuff looks old, but it's nice and clean.
It's nice and clean.
Ask me if I've been to Paris. I'll answer you. Nope, but I've been to Paris and Las Vegas, so yes.
Same thing. Yeah, totally.
So virtually I've been
there. Yeah,
same thing.
Yeah, and then you go to Gordon Ramsay's restaurant, which is in Paris. You go through a fake tiny tunnel.
Where?
The English Channel Tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
You go through a fake one of those, and then you end up in England at Gordon Ramsay's restaurant. I mean, where else can you do that? Probably England. And Paris.
England and Paris.
Everything longer.
But also Vegas.
By the way, I don't know if I've gotten I saw you at the Streamies last time, I think.
Yes.
I went to the Streamies, and you guys won the award for Burning Love.
Yeah.
And Burning Love is so fucking funny.
Thanks, man.
Legitimately... And I love seeing things like Burning Love, where I see a bunch of people that I know all getting to do what they're really good at, which is just be funny. I mean, it was such a great.
Oh, thanks. I mean, you know, I'm proud of it, and my wife wrote it, and we got to work together, so that was really cool. And then you know, we were lucky enough to get a lot of really funny people doing it. So.
Did it just stem from you and Erica just sitting and watching The Bachelor? And
essentially, she watched it more than I did, but I got into it for a little while. There were a couple of seasons where I was like kind of watching it as much as she was, and then I sort of got it.
Yeah.
I was like, I get it. Now I get it. Yeah, okay, cool. but she's watched pretty much all of them, and so... You know, in a way, it's her writing this satire of those shows is sort of a labor of love.
It's great.
Well, it was the show. The execution of it was pretty brilliant too, because there are not. I find that with web video stuff, there are not. And now we know it's a TV show now, but with web video stuff, there are not a lot of destination websites where you could put something on a homepage somewhere, and then people like that would help the traffic enormously, but. But the integration with Yahoo's comedy page and just being like, pow, like front and center.
Yeah.
It's almost like, oh, fuck, that's what web video needs. It needs a destination site.
I think so. I mean, I don't know much about how things are promoted other than what we did, because I'm just not savvy to that world. But, yeah, I think we got very lucky with Yahoo picking it up and Yahoo putting it on their front page, basically, to promote it. I mean, it did cause a lot of confusion with a lot of people who went to Yahoo who didn't know it was a satire or just... You
those
know,
fucking
so,
comment threads must
and,
have been
oh,
gold.
They were great. I mean, it was... You know, I looked forward to reading all the comments every time a new one came out, because about 40% of them thought it was real... And was but then they were getting up on like their soapbox, kind of talking about how television is corroding and how do people watch this reality television, and they didn't realize that they were making fun of or like they were mocking something, but it wasn't the thing that they were mocking.
Watching people get real angry at fake things. Like, there's still people who get mad at The Onion like it's a real thing.
Right. Yeah. Which is insane.
It's insane. You'd think everyone at this point...
We had Jennifer Aniston in this first episode, and we had Ben Stiller in the first episode, and you would think that if you're watching this, you might be like, oh, that's Ben Stiller, that's Jennifer Aniston. This isn't real. And yet people were like... They didn't even see that.
Do you know what,
even,
though? Yeah. Most people, if you're not comedy people, most people aren't trained. We are trained to automatically see irony. Like, we expect it.
Right.
We expect things to be like, oh, this has got to be a fucking joke, or this isn't real. But
even watching shows, reality shows, when I see something funny, I go, the editor knew what he was doing there. That's very funny.
But when I went and when I was in Memphis a few years ago, I saw Tropic Thunder with my dad. And Tropic Thunder opens with the a commercial for whatever
the trailer. It's a trailer for
the soft drink.
Oh,
it's a trailer for the movie. It's a trailer for a fake movie.
Right. Oh, it starts with the soft drink thing?
Yeah, there's a soft drink thing and then a trailer. What was the name of the drink? It was like, what?
Booty sweat.
Booty sweat. Yeah, and my dad after the movie was like, "Yeah, the movie was pretty good. I don't understand why they showed the commercial for that drink at the beginning, though. Like, is that a, like, he just didn't even make a connection. Like, oh, that was the guy in the movie, and that was setting up his character, like, in the movie. Like,
right.
He, a lot of people who are not trained to see comedy and things, they really do, they're very trusting. They just take it literally.
Right.
So if they see it on a homepage, they think, oh, this is a real thing. Right. And, but wasn't that guy on? No. I think
no,
these are
No, because
real...
this is a real thing, because yeah. It was on the front page of Yahoo.
They're
this
saying that it's a show that's about, so it must be that thing.
People were like, this isn't news. But it sent you to the Yahoo's comedy page. Like,
this
it's
isn't
like,
news.
That's right, it's not news. It's a comedy bit.
Yeah, you really just, all day long, you could just point in comments and go, wow.
But it was
wow.
fine. It's also fun watching the people defend that it's not a that it's not real. So then the people start to get like go back and forth until the person who thought it was real, who didn't think it was real, goes, "Well, yeah, okay, so it's real, but I didn't think it was funny anyway." And you're like, "Well, at this point, I don't. Your opinion means nothing."
I mean, of all the things that you had said done up to that point, I imagine that you didn't expect that Burning Love was going to be a thing that like, oh, wow, yeah, this web video thing that we're going to do, this web series is going
to... No, I mean, you know, we were just, it was just a fun project that Eric and I wanted to do, and we had no idea that it would kind of blow up to be like a bigger thing, which it did. It became like this nice, you know, project that we're both very proud of, and it, you know, generated, you know, the fact that it got bought by E and the fact that like it got nice reviews. I keep telling my wife, I'm like, every it got reviewed a lot and it got really good reviews, and I keep telling Eric, I'm like, that's not normal at all. So
don't get used to this.
The next thing you write, just understand that's going to go down. That you don't normally get like.
So in her mind, it's just like, oh, if you just make a thing,
yeah,
it's all,
people love it. Just people really like it. I'm like, yeah. No.
No, I've been doing this a really long time.
Mostly everything I do gets shitty reviews.
Is that how was the state received? I think the state it probably would have been weird because it was like, what does MTV know about making a sketch comedy show?
The state was when it came out was terribly. It was got terrible reviews, and we did one of my favorite things that we did on the state was the second season we came out. We used all the negative reviews. And we had access to the MTV library of music at that time. We didn't have to pay for anything. And what's the BG song? I started a joke. And so it was to that, and it would come up, like all the different reviews would come up, and it was just like this sad montage of us like in black and white, just like wandering through like a country road and tossing rocks in a pond.
Oh, that's great.
And the negative reviews were like -2.5 stars. Whoever worked at MTV should be given a urine test, and like, you know, just a bunch of shit like that. And it came out really good. It was a good commercial. I think it's on the DVD, but I don't know where else you can see it.
It really sort of ushered in the age of awareness, I think, in or at least, you know, at that time period. I'm not saying it never happened before, but when I think about comedy in the 80s versus comedy in the 90s, you know, you and I are of the same generation. So the idea of all this stuff in the 80s and the 90s, we look back and kind of made fun of all of those archetypes and tricks that they, you know, so like the I want to dip my balls in a guy, like, oh, you're making fun of all the catchphrases that were unironic in the 80s,
and yet and yes, that was the big thing, because we were the first season of MTV, they were like, they gave us a list of things we needed to do. I'm sure you've heard, like, you know, having worked there, you know, like they were like, you need to be, you know, you need to do you know, Sick and Twisted. We needed Sick and Twisted sketches. We needed, you know, sketches about musicians. You know, like we needed whoever was big at the time.
The Spin Doctors. Probably.
We did do a Spin Doctors thing. We did Flea. We did a thing like with Flea and like. But they gave us all this list of things we had to do the first season, then they backed off the second season. But one of them was recurring characters. And for some reason, we were like, fuck that. We're not doing recurring characters. We're not that kind of sketch group. We're not going to – like for some reason, we took the stance like, we're not going to do it. And so we did. So we didn't. So our kind of fuck you is like, we're going to come up with one recurring character that we base a whole show around. He's going to come out one time. We're going to build up the whole show to have him come out one time. He's going to say his catchphrase. The catchphrase is going to be like the most random, stupid thing we can think of. It wound up being, I want to dip my balls in it. And then that's it. And we're never going to show it again. And we had like, we got Iggy Pop to come on and talk about like, This guy, you know, Louis, the recurring character, my guy, like as if I've been like that character's been around for decades. And he's talking about like Louis coming out. And we did this whole show based around the idea that we'd never bring a recurring character back, you know, bring him back again. And then MTV was like, that's great. Bring him back. And we're like, oh, no, oh, oh shit.
You understand.
So we brought him back. But we came up with a good sketch with him later on, which is him with in the Last Supper, which I thought was my favorite kind of Louis sketch. He kind of interrupts Jesus's Last Supper with the disciples, which was kind of nice.
I loved that. I remember on the state VHS tape,
skits and stickers.
At the end, you guys did the Cannonball Runout takes.
Yeah, well, that was at the end of a show. We would end the credits of every show, I think, differently, and we did that one time, which was the bit was just to do them as verbatim, like to not.
It was so specific,
anything.
And Latrulio, I think Latrulio was Burt Reynolds.
He was Burt Reynolds because he could
yeah,
do.
He's got the laugh.
He could do the good Burt Reynolds laugh.
Yeah, I take those rosary bleeds. These bleeds.
These bleeds, right here. You're gonna take these bleeds.
You're gonna take these motherfucking bleeds.
That was Tom, and I was so bummed. I was like, I wanted to be Dean Martin. I was not happy.
Oh God, the state was like last year. I was over Tom's house, and he had dug up because they were doing this thing that I was hosting at Sketchfest, which was Tom and Ben and Carrie, like a retrospective thing, and he dug up the CBS Halloween special.
Oh yeah, yeah. The 43rd and final CBS Halloween special.
The state had a Halloween special on CBS.
Nobody
that I completely
watched it.
Forgot about
it. It came in at last. I think we beat out Dweebs. Remember Dweebs on
UPN? Oh my God! I completely.
We beat out Dweebs.
Wow.
Nobody watched it.
You just gave me the experience of like, I tripped over something and knocked a bookcase over and there was something in the wall. Like, well, this photo album, I totally forgot there was a thing in the wall here. I completely forgot about Dweebs in that. Dweebs, oh my yeah. God.
We beat out Dweebs.
It was a hard fought victory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peter
Dinklage was the devil.
Yep.
In the opening musical number.
What?
Yeah.
We fall into a pit and he's the devil and he pokes us in the
Tyrion Lannister.
Because it opens like on a graveyard of like dead shows, right?
Well, we were just singing about how nobody's watching this show anyway, so basically, fuck you. That was our big opening number.
That's fantastic.
It's really terrific.
I hope that's online somewhere. Is that anywhere?
Oh,
can
I don't know
get
if
that?
It is. I think it's just like it Tom just had a VHS copy of it.
We have it, but I'll show it to you sometime.
I would love to see
it. It's some good stuff on it. We had just left MTV what we had at the time when we left was a deal at ABC, and then that fell through. We were going to be like, do it like a late night show that was, I guess, going to sort of be up against SNL, or, you know, it was just going to be an after hours thing, not primetime thing. And then we thought we had it. I mean, we were like, you got 13 of them. And then time kept going by. And we're like, hey, what's going on with that deal? Is it happening? And then finally, and we went out with like all the William Morris people, like all the head William Morris people. They took us out for like steak and cigars and whiskey. We were drinking like, you know, scotch and like these people I'd never seen before and never met again. They took us out. It was like a big fucking deal. And then, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Peter Prince Potter, who was working.
Oh, there you go.
I know Peter Prince Potter.
It was a big fucking deal, and then just time started passing. We're like, hey, so when are we signing those contracts? What's going on with those contracts? And then all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, it's not gonna happen. And so then we made a deal with CBS, which was a far less superior deal, which was a special in the hopes that we can then get another special in the hopes that we can then get a series.
Isn't
out of it
funny the way television works? It's a lesson you learn. You learn it time and again, and it never feels good. But there's something about television where a lot of times they don't want to tell you no, or they don't want to tell you something's not happening, so they just don't say anything. And it's like you said, like 3 months and then 6 months. And then at a certain point, it's sort of, they basically do the same thing that you do when you take leftovers home from a restaurant.
Until they start collecting mold.
You leave it in the fridge so you don't have to feel guilty about wasting food. That's right. And then you're like, oh, well, it's moldy. I have to throw it away now. I have no choice.
Now I don't care.
Yeah, you're letting, it's basically the let nature take its course execution.
Right. Run all the different emotions of like hatred and, you know, denial and all the things. Let that run its course. Don't talk to them. Let them just deal with that. And sooner or later, they'll sort of forget about it.
Yeah, everyone will forget about it.
It's like when somebody dies. Like at first you're upset, and then over time you sort of like, you're like, okay, you're at
peace. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Or if, you know, if something goes missing in some, you know.
I missed that. Ah, that's all right.
Yeah,
time,
you know, I'm sure it'll be fine.
I don't miss that series on ABC.
Yeah, it's not. it's fine.
I'm fine. We'll just do a special.
Sure, we'll do a special with you.
So, guys, we're going out for another steak dinner?
You'll call me back? They're in a meeting? Okay.
And cigars. Let's give them the classic Hollywood experience. We'll go to Morton's. We'll have some cigars.
It was really, we were like, we fucking did it.
We've made it.
We did it.
Oh, we've made it.
And then no. And we had left MTV. MTV was like, you want to do some more shows? And we're like, we're gonna try some other stuff. Thank you, though. We got some other stuff.
Hey, MTV.
Hey, guys. Hey, MTV. Hello?
Even William Morris calls and we're like, do you have any of that cigar left? Because we're gonna need it back.
Everything worked out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that I really don't believe anymore. I don't know what else to call it, but I guess just because I went to Catholic high school, I refer to it as pre-Vatican II entertainment industry, which is basically like before the major paradigm shift happened. So in terms of like lots of channels, lots of, you know, like internet, you know, like, so it in a pre-Vatican II entertainment world, you could just get on one show and then that would make your career. You could appear on one late night talk show as a comic and then all of a sudden you had a career. And now I think our generation of people, and certainly the younger generation of people, it really is the sum total of a lot of things that over time eventually accumulate to amass something that resembles a career.
Well, but your brain now can't even comprehend a comedian going on The Tonight Show and then getting a deal for a TV show.
No. It just doesn't work anymore. So, you know, a lot of it really is just fucking staying on the train. Like, if you could just stay on the train long enough.
And not anticipate, don't like think that it's going to come some specific way, because you never know. I mean, you know, Party Down, the show, I did a show, Party Down, and that came from, I was a guest on Veronica Mars, and I was doing some stuff on Veronica Mars, and those guys were like, oh, we had this script that we were doing with we were shopping it around, and I was like, oh, can I read it? And they're like, yeah, and I read it, and I was like, oh, that's a really cool part. I go, if you ever audition for that part, I want to audition. I mean, you know, if you're ever seeing people, I want to audition for that part. And I got along with those guys on that show so much that when Veronica Mars got canceled, they just called up and they said, can you do this for $100 a day at Rob's house, which is going to shoot it, and try to and try to sell it. And so I was like, yeah, I'll come by. And so it was me and Adam and Jane, and Martin wasn't part of it at that point, and we shot this pilot for nothing, and then they shot around, a year went by, and I was like, oh, I guess that didn't work out. And so then I was shooting Children's Hospital, which was just a web series for Cordry, we were shooting like the full season in a week, and I got a call, and they're like, hey, Starz is going to pick up Party Down. And I was like, what's Stars and
what's Party Down? I don't remember anything I've ever worked on.
Right. And so I was like, all right, cool. But it, you know, came out of, you don't know where things are going to come from, or, you know, as long as you just keep kind of doing it and doing it, you know, hopefully in a way that's healthy for you and people around you.
And don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
Seriously, don't be a dick. You know, don't seriously, that's the Will Wheaton rule. Which is seriously...
No, it's super important, because I already have people on my shit list that I'm like,
you're
a dick.
It's the number one thing. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Because you don't, you know...
You're an actor.
There are some jobs where people might have to work with you, but if they're given a choice and you're a cock to them, then they won't work with you. And you... And I mean, like, beyond the basic human element of you should just be nice to people, beyond that, it is a long business, and people really do have memories about things. They get stuff stuck in their craw, and if you piss someone off, even if it was 20 years ago, they still will not want to work with you.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
So just be nice to people.
Be nice. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Be nice. And don't, you know, because I think, you know, a lot of times, I think what can happen is, again, we talked about so much rejection in the business that eventually if you do make it, there's almost sort of a, like, ha, now I get to, it's like that person kind of gets to take it back out on the entertainment industry, like all the shit that they got over the years. And so they're maybe shitty to people who are subordinate to them. But hey, guess what? The guy who's peeing on the show could be show running in a couple of years.
Right.
And I don't know. Maybe be nice to that kid.
Well, I have a theory about.
Well, it sounds like I'm saying you should just be nice to people for work reasons.
No, well, but I mean, it's smart to be nice to people, but you should be nice to people anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my theory about, like, oh, he became famous or she became famous and became a dick. I don't know how much of that I believe. I think you're a dick from the beginning, or you're not. Like,
right.
Either you're a good person and nice things happen and you remain a good person, or you're kind of a dick and you're kind of playing it, maybe, or you're just a dick and you just happen to get some good opportunities, and then now that you have these opportunities, you're a real cock to people.
Yeah.
Because you think you deserve something.
Well, and also at a certain point, people stop telling you you can't do things because, you know, it's like you sort of lose that natural balance or barometer that other people would keep you in check and be like, you're kind of being a dick. You know, like if you don't have that person around, it's sort of like the fish tank theory. The bigger the tank, the bigger the fish is. You know, it's like if you don't have that around and you don't have any sort of compass, then it's off.
There's,
you know,
like
all bets are off.
Certain amount of zeros in your bank account apparently that let you go, well, I guess I can finally be the dick I've always been.
And people are afraid to say anything, or they don't want to, you know, because people in the entertainment business can be very, very, very superstitious or delicate about, you know, this thing is generating money right now. Don't do anything.
Don't rock the boat.
Don't. Yeah, but he's being a dick. Let it just, don't worry about the dick boat. Just fucking let it happen, you know. And so, you know, some people can get out of control. I've been fortunate enough. I don't think I've ever really worked with any of those people.
I have. I've worked with awful, awful people.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Don't name the name, but give us an example of the awfulness.
It was just, you know, I worked with people who felt that they could do what they wanted. It's exactly what you're saying, which is, and people like, don't rock the boat. And I'd be like, but this is madness, right? And people would call me in like a corner of a room and be like, yes. That being said, don't rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat.
We're kind of rocking the boat right
Say
now.
Say nothing about the madness. They might be able to hear us. Yeah.
And then they would run off.
And then you'd never hear from them again.
No joke.
They would scurry into the vents.
no joke.
I came down here to tell you.
It was madness. Anyway, that being said, So
do you
move off of that?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's... Again, I feel lucky that I have not had that experience. But, you know, I haven't really done a lot of acting jobs, I haven't been on a lot of ensemble cast things where there could be a fail point somewhere because there's like five people, you know.
Well, I will say that, these are all life lessons. So, like, when something like that happens, it only makes you kind of get clarity on what you want in the future and what you will put up with or what you need. You know what I mean? Like, I refuse to deal with anybody who's a dick anymore. And my now go-to is, like, I will just say, this is what you're doing right now. So if you're doing it intentionally, please stop. And if you're not doing it intentionally, you need to know that this is what's happening.
Some people are not. Yeah, and you can really catch someone off guard if you very calmly address it and be direct.
Yes. And it works.
And do you find that then those people respect you more?
I find that they are not as much of a dick. Yes,
that's really good.
Yeah, but to the person who said it, and it doesn't bleed over into how they deal with other people. They just
realize that you're not a victim that they can punch in the face anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like you need to stand up for other people?
I think, I guess so. I guess that's Maybe.
How do you work when you're working, when you're writing? Or it's like when you're shooting and you're writing, do you get intense, or are you pretty like level-headed and like, oh, there's just a series of problems and we'll solve them, and you know, this is a...
Well, it's been different throughout the years. I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten kind of more mellow about, oh, this will work itself out. And when I was younger, I was more kind of passionate, and I mean, I'm passionate, but I was excited about shit. I didn't know what the answers were or if things would work out, and so, you know, I would get, you know, more excited and say loud, and the Italian part of me would come out. But like, I don't think I was ever a dick about things, but I definitely got passionate about stuff.
Hey, why do you want to do this with this script? Why you do this?
You just stay still. I clear your ass.
Oh, be careful when he's mad. His Italian comes out. Why you gotta do this?
Somebody said that 90% of the time I'm a very nice guy on set, and then like 10% there's Inferno Ken. And I was like, at first I was offended, and I was like, and then I was like, oh yeah, maybe you're right. But it is, but it, yeah, but it's not that I'm being mean to anybody. I just get like, there are certain things that I kind of don't like, that like when people are not nice to other people on set, I don't like that.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more we should tap into.
Looking at Andrew. What is it that you're working on?
I was looking at you because I think you want me to talk about. We should talk about Bad Milo, and we haven't talked about it yet. And
no, your movie Bad Milo.
Yes, yeah. So at some point, I feel like we need to cover that.
Let's
Otherwise,
do it.
I think you might get very upset.
No, he looks angry.
Well, I'm so sorry.
I mean,
Andrew,
he's here.
We're out of time. So
no, he's here specifically for that.
This whole time he's just like looking at his watch like, when are they going to talk about?
Yeah. Well, there was a nice segue with the bidets.
15 minutes on shitting. What the fuck, man?
That was a good segue.
We were going to do it.
Yeah, the state. It's over. What happened? Can we
it happened
talk
20
about,
years ago.
Can we talk about a thing that's coming out now that people can actually see? What the fuck?
So we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
Bad Milo
is
a movie I just did. Duplass Brothers produced it, and it's about a guy who's stressed out so much that he has an ulcer, but it turns out his ulcer is a monster living in his colon.
Oh, I heard about this movie.
And he comes out of his colon, he comes out of his ass, and kills the people that are stressing him out, and then goes back up his ass.
I heard about this movie.
I'm telling you, you'll love it.
Love already.
You'll love it. It's kind of a throwback to like
to nothing. That's not a throwback to anything.
But the puppetry and the kind of
basket case
and Gremlins and things like that. It's got there's a little bit of, it's not as straight. It's not dramatic like The Brood, but like you know, it's kind of a throwback. So there's real puppet. It's a real practical puppet, and it's a really funny, ridiculous movie that I'm very proud of.
That's fantastic. Yeah. When does it come out?
Well, it came out on video on demand.
Call that VOD.
VOD, I don't know, a week or two ago. And then it comes out in like selected theaters. What's that? 10-4.
Good buddy.
10-4, good buddy. But it went to South by Southwest, and it got sold there, and it's been nicely received. It's been getting, for you know, an ass monster, butt monster movie, it's been getting some nice reviews. Of all the butt monster movies that have come out recently, this has by far gotten the best reviews.
Well, every director goes through a butt monster phase.
That's right.
And so I think it's just part of the development.
I love how
every actor, when you come out to L.A., you get off the bus, and you're like, okay, when am I going to get my shot at a butt monster
movie? When am I
going to
get the butt monster movie?
That's how I'm going to get the
Not
Oscar.
Not yet, kid. You got to pay your dues.
I'll be the butt monster. I'll be the guy with the butt monster. I don't care.
I'll be the friend of the guy with the butt monster.
Who does this fucking
matter.
Kid think he is? He's going to be the butt monster. You just got off the bus.
I Come know. On, pal. But it's my dream.
First, you got to play mentally handicapped. Then you got to play blind.
Then you got to do Shakespeare with boners. And then...
Yeah. Butt monster movie.
That's fantastic. Yeah, they gave me a copy of it last night. But I haven't seen it yet, so I'll
watch it. Peter Stormare is in it, and Patrick Warburton, and Stephen Root, and Mary Kay Place.
Phenomenal.
Gillian Jacobs. It's like a really cool... Kumail's in it.
Oh, Kumail's in it?
Yeah, and he's great.
What a fantastic cast.
It's good.
Oh, that Patrick Warburton. He loves the Pearl Jam.
Does he like the Pearl Jam?
Oh, he's a Pearl Jam fanatic. We had him on the podcast, and it was like we just found this vein.
And he just talked about Pearl Jam the whole time?
He loves Pearl Jam.
Do you love Pearl Jam?
I like Pearl Jam, but not Warburton like Pearl Jam.
No.
I mean, like, he is intense. He'll tell you, like, oh, and this concert was 97, and they played here, and this was their set list. Like, he's hardcore.
Wow. With that voice, too. If he says it with that
he's
voice,
he's got
it sounds
that
really,
voice.
Yeah.
who plays the butt monster? Who's the voice of the butt monster? Are you the voice of the? Are you the monster? Or are you the guy that?
No, he's the guy
out?
With the. Butt
I'm the
monster.
Guy who the butt monster comes out of.
Okay.
So you see me do some toilet work.
Mm-hmm.
You see me do some
nip-a-day work,
toilet birthing work. and then some just sentimental, like, nice scenes between me and the butt monster. And then you what you could look forward to is the butt monster going back up my butt.
Uh-huh.
And we capture that on film.
You say capture like, oh, guys, it's happening right now. Get the cameras.
Turn the cameras around. Get turn the on cameras. The lights. The butt monster's re-entering.
We had these time-lapse cameras set up for about 2 days just waiting for this
No, it was weird
because
you know, it was just scared. In rehearsal, it would go right up.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Then when the camera was
I was
rolling,
doing it at home. I don't know what happened. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, the puppeteer was like, I can't do it.
I don't know. How did I do this? Was I using an accent? I don't remember.
The grips are staring at me weird. Can we just do this just me and the director? Can we do it that way?
Send everybody else out of the room.
They have to do a closed set.
It's like a sex scene.
They have to do a closed set, and they're just listening.
Peter Stramera's one of his lines is maybe the asshole is much like a vagina. Babies are birthed through vaginas, and they're big. I'm paraphrasing, but he has a funny line like that.
Well, that's great. So Bad Milo's out on VOD.
Bad Milo, yeah.
I'll watch Bad Milo. And then what else are you guys doing? Are you guys doing more Burning Love?
We're not doing any more Burning Love. I just finished the fourth season of Eastbound and Down.
Right? Yeah, I know that's coming out,
Which I'm very excited about. And Lake, you know Lake Bell?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know her well, but
she just did a movie called In a World. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to be part of that. And then Children's Hospital is out right now.
You work on a lot of good comedy things.
Axe Cop.
Yes!
Axe Cop. I'm in Axe Cop. I'm Flute Cop.
There was a big Axe Cop thing at Comic-Con this year. I think they actually had like
they had
a giant,
the big float. Yeah, yeah, I mean, a big balloon of Axe Cop.
That's fucking great.
Yeah, and I caught this story behind that. My brother-in-law got me into Axe Cop, the comic and or the graphic novel. What should I call it?
Yeah, you call it a comic.
I mean, I'm in a comic book
store. Yeah, you're a
comic book
store. Yeah,
a comic book. Yeah. And so I was really into it, and I heard Nick Weidenfeld at ADHD was doing it, and I called him up. I was like, dude, can you consider me for Axe Cop? And he's like, Offerman's doing it. I'm like, oh, well, any other part? He's like, you want to play Flute Cop? I was like, sure, I'll play Flute Cop. Sure, absolutely, I'll play Flute Cop. That's the part I always wanted to play anyway.
You can't argue with that, though.
No, you can't.
Of course, Nick Offerman is fucking Axe Cop.
As soon as he said Nick Offerman, I was like, oh, fuck, that's right. It's like spot on.
I fucking love Offerman. Like, that guy,
fuck.
There's something about him that he communicates in such an eloquent way. He could make anything sound interesting. Just
yes.
Recently, I've decided to start putting these exotic pears on my skin, and I really notice a difference. And you're like, oh my God.
Really, it's a really good Offerman. Yeah. It's really good, right? I did not expect you to like lay out some Offerman. Like,
recently, I can't do it. I don't know. How you
and he's kind of he does the eyebrows too.
Yeah,
and almost
yeah.
like he almost goes into Offerman when he's doing Offerman.
Yeah.
We recently started placing frozen water into basins of chilled beverages. You're like, so you had an iced tea?
Ice.
Yes.
That's awesome.
He's the best. Well, so Axe Cop and then Bad Milo and then all these other things. And then are you just Ken Marino on Twitter?
I am Ken Marino on Twitter, yeah. With the little blue check. Does that mean something?
You're verified. That
I'm
means
verified.
You're verified. That means Twitter acknowledges that you are who you say you are.
Wow.
People are very, oh, it's a very sensitive topic for.
What? What happened? You don't get a blue
verified.
Check?
Jonah got verified. Chris got verified. I've been on two TV shows. I have not gotten a verification check.
What does it mean? I don't understand.
You have the right attitude about it.
What is it?
Oh, guys, you would have this attitude too if you didn't have a fucking blue check mark.
It's basically like having like a Boy Scout badge.
There are fake Matt Myra accounts.
Oh,
and I still don't have
I get
a blue
it,
check
I get
mark.
It. I get what the big deal is. Okay.
I just don't get it. The reasons you should be verified, they're all happening.
Can't
to me.
You can't give it to yourself?
Well, I asked Chris once. I asked Chris if I could get verified one time, and his response to me was, "Oh, well, I have to get the whole Doctor Who cast verified." So,
why didn't I? You know,
that's exactly what you said to me.
Wait a second.
That's exactly what you said to me. He worried about the Doctor Who cast because Matt Smith could never get verified on his own.
Matt Smith isn't on Twitter. It was for Karen and Arthur.
It was for Karen and Arthur. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah.
Your impression of Chris is as good as his Offerman.
Right?
Nice afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're with Ken Moreno.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. I'm Chris Hardwick.
I feel like that voice just always is Brian Regan.
Oh, what am I going to do over here with this guy over here?
Yeah, it is without the
what
accent.
Am I gonna,
yeah, that's what Chris's voice.
What am I over here?
We got 50 single boys and 50 single girls over here.
50 single women over here right after the state marathon.
Tune in for more Spring Break 95.
I hope you were enjoying Kevin Seal Sport and Fool. Next is remote control marathon.
Good pull. Good pull. I get excited about a good ref. Anyway.
MTV Sports.
God damn it. Those were fun. I mean, MTV was a fun... Almost, it was like public access, but you just knew that somewhere someone was making money.
We weren't.
No, we weren't.
There were 11 of us in a room, and we were, I think, making like $1,100 split between the 11 of us, or some ridiculous thing. Like, we were like, we had one room, no windows. We built a Foursquare game in the middle of the room, which we would play naked Foursquare from time to time. That's fine, right?
Yeah, that's not weird at all.
That's exactly what happens.
Just like take off your clothes.
Your friends, you got some coffee.
I guess
we'll play Foursquare without the things touch.
Yeah, but they did touch. And we didn't get paid much. I guess the point was that we didn't get paid much.
I guess
not so much that we were naked.
I think the first year of, I think on Singled Out, I probably, and Singled Out, by the way, was like, one of the biggest hits MTV had ever had.
Yeah.
Like, one of the biggest shows MTV had ever had. And I think, even in its heyday, I think maybe I didn't have a good agent or something. And at the time, I thought, like, oh, my God, I'm making a ton of money because I was out of college and I hadn't really, you know.
I'm making $2,000 a week.
I was parking cars. Like, I was fucking parking cars. And so, you know, I think maybe I made the equivalent of, like, $60,000 a year before taxes or
and you did it all
fees.
Year.
Yeah, for the whole year.
But you got to go to the events.
Yes! Sometimes they let me in.
It's like a bonus.
Most of the time they forgot there was another person on that show, at the time I was like, hey, I think I'm pulling in like, you know, 45 G's net or whatever it was. And then and then after I got like a real agent, they were like, oh, yeah, that was really bad. Like, they, you know, like, not like MTV would have paid me that much more. But, you know, I can't really complain. It was, you know, it was a good job to have out of college. But, yeah, it was like they were shockingly.
Oh, no, you didn't.
And that show ran
somebody
four times a day.
You doing K-Rock also finally makes sense. Like, you doing that.
K-Rock. Okay, K-Rock. I really was not good at business. K-Rock, when I worked at K-Rock simultaneously with Singled Out, they paid me $75 a shift for the biggest radio station.
No.
And then I'd been there a year, and I went to the program director, Kevin Weatherly, and I was like, I've been here like a year. Is that right if I get a raise? And he was like, okay. So they bumped me up to like 125 a shift.
Hey.
That's a huge increase percentage-wise.
Percentage-wise, yeah. Yeah.
That's probably, yeah.
But when you kind of consider like, this is a pretty big radio.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, it was, I didn't make.
It's very similar to the cast of Will and Grace getting Porsches for doing so well in the ratings.
Getting Porsches one weekend.
Yeah.
Network TV money is not cable money.
No.
I mean, cable money's getting better.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
Is it?
I mean,
somebody. Okay. What shows are you working on?
Well, Talking Bad, Talking Dead.
I don't know. But it is. It still is interesting to see. I mean, like, we've seen the television landscape change. So it's like our careers have been going long enough.
Yeah.
That we have seen ridiculous changes to how things are done.
Yes.
I mean, just a complete flip of how things are done.
There's a lot more places to kind of go do your thing. And so I think it's fun to see, you know, the types of shows that are popping up now that, you know, didn't have a platform, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Well, there's like, you know, someone like you who can be funny doing a lot of different things. You may have, you know, for better or for worse, in the old way, been stuck on a sitcom and like a second or third lead without really being able to do much on the show. You'd have a great job. You'd get paid well.
Are you just describing Jim Gaffigan?
No. But you...
When I came out here in 97, that's what I was doing for, you know, 8 years or whatever, trying to go down that road, trying to get that, you know, kind of gold ring.
But
or whatever.
But now, like, you just, you know, you listed like five or six things, which were all really great things to be a part of.
Right, and that
you never would have been able to do before. You wouldn't have been able to go off and do, you know, Children's Hospital and Party
because
Down.
Because I failed at trying to get a regular television show, I have had the opportunity to work on some really, really good projects.
I think it's better.
I agree with you. But that is how it happened.
You might for a while be trading off like a big payday. But then, okay, great, you have a big payday, but then you're not doing something that's really fun for you.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, like, you get to do a different thing probably every couple days.
It all adds up. I am very happy with where things have landed. If I was doing, you know, which I would still love to do a series. I mean, on one of the main networks, if possible. But, I mean, I've had the opportunity to work on these kind of smaller, really interesting, super funny projects that I've been lucky enough to be a part of, and I've gotten because there's these short time commitments, like Children's Hospital, we shoot in like 2.5 months or 2 months,
yeah.
And you know, Axe Cop, I'll just like show up and do, and even like Party Down or some other shows that I've worked on, you show up for a little bit and you shoot them out and then you're done. And I get to do Bad Milo. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do that if it was shooting, you know, the time it shot. You know, I probably, if I was on something else. So I get to do these, like, kind of fun projects.
Yeah. I think for our attention spans, it's good, too, not to just do the same thing over and over and over. You don't get to do anything else.
Yeah. I agree.
Good for you.
Thanks, buddy.
Did I put you guys asleep with the last thing I was saying?
No, it was pretty good.
I don't know what to say sometimes, so I just keep talking.
Well, we can, let's just have a moment of silence.
I thought it was... It's,
you're fucking ruined
moment.
It!
We had a moment. Like, has a moment to you is like I was, a fucking beat.
I was under the impression anyone who was verified on Twitter had to be silent.
I didn't say an instance of silence. Oh, I see. It goes back to that.
Yeah.
Get him the blue.
I was visiting Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think one of the Twitter guys ran into Jonah at Comic-Con, and Jonah
verify me and not Matt. Was that a situation that happened?
Probably. No. They were like they said, oh, you should tell Matt. You know, this is a way that he can get verified. And Jonah was like, why would I do that? It's so fun to hold it over his head.
Makes sense.
Oh, hey.
At least there's a reason.
It'll happen.
I just want to say, and I said to you before the show, but I don't know how the... I'm sorry I missed the last time I was supposed to come in.
Well, no one else knows that but me, but I don't mind.
No, I remember it. We were sitting in the studio.
Oh, that's right. Because, yeah, there was a crossed wire. I don't mind. I never care about that stuff.
It
doesn't matter. It happens. It totally is not... I mean, we... Not one of us has not been in that position where you're supposed to be somewhere and then someone calls you like, Roy,
I'm like, I'm not going to be there in 20 minutes.
Oh, shit! You know, and then it just happens. It's
plus,
big,
we were at the
deal.
E building where we were all working at the time.
See,
so.
And this goes back to, because I know you as a nice guy, I know that it was not a dick move on your part. It was just an honest, like, miscommunication, so it's totally fine.
I appreciate that. I felt shitty about it, and I felt shittier, like, because I was like, I could try to get there, I could still get there. And then you guys are like, we got somebody else coming in. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, no, don't worry about it. I mean, you owe me.
Listen, absolutely.
A lot. I mean, I don't
Not
know
a problem.
What but just for that
whatever
one,
you need.
Just
What, you want me to kill a guy? What do you want?
Yes, I just
not
wanna,
a problem.
I want to have
it's in
the,
my blood.
I want to have the relationship with you like the one of the what like the Stark girl from Game of Thrones, where you're the assassin, and I can three times I can call upon you to kill someone.
Let's do it.
Okay, good.
I'm in.
I probably shouldn't have recorded that.
Well, now they recorded it. It won't possibly happen. You know what I mean?
You're winking. Are you okay?
No, I have something in mind.
Oh shit! You were doing a sign to. Now when people see you, they're gonna their first thought is like, is Chris Hardwick mad at me? And then
that's right.
They'll think that you're gonna
I might take him out.
You're gonna kill him. Okay, good. Ken Marino, awesome to see you.
Thank
Matt
you,
Matt Myra.
Having
we
me.
Will get you verified.
It's all right.
Jonah, you were great.
Jonah was fantastic. Not
Jonah,
being
you killed
here.
It today. You killed it. You're halfway done with your essay.
Well, that's Kyle. That's Kyle. Jonah's usually sits
sorry.
Here.
Kyle.
See, Jonah's not verified to Ken. Does that make you feel better?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
A lot better.
Oh, shit.
Thanks, Ken.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
We're going to get you verified.
That's all right. You don't have to.
Well, oops. You seemed very passionate about it.
Well, I mean, I just feel like it should have happened.
No, what do you think is going to change about your life once you get that blue check mark?
I'll have
on
a
your
blue
page?
Check mark.
And then what happens?
That's all that happens.
Well,
hey, well, what is this about burritos?
Oh, we say enjoy your burrito as a way to say to the kids out there, if you're...
The
there.
Opposite of what
enjoy.
Matt's feeling about the blue verification mark.
Enjoy your life. Enjoy the moment.
Enjoy your burrito.
Enjoy the moment. You know?
Enjoy the moment when you're going to get that blue verification mark.
Someday. I don't know what I have to do. I really don't. I don't get it.
Somewhere out there beneath the certain star, we'll find this blue check mark somewhere out there.
I prefer Five Goes West, guys.
Blue somewhere out there through these fucking stars.
What are you looking at?
I have a lot of text messages while we were on.
Like anything good?
Just people are at Disneyland. Jenny Owen Youngs will be out in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
392 events were updated by somebody in the podcast calendar.
Wow.
392, Ken.
I don't know what that means.
Just don't worry about
it. I don't know what that means. We're not still on, are we?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're recording. We're not necessarily using it.
Oh, all right.
This is the post show.
Yeah. So who was a dick? Tell us.
He just does a laundry list of people. Why do you like that?
I can't tell you. You're not verified.
Oh! Matt, could you leave the room so Ken and I can have a private verified conversation?
I can do that for you. That's not a problem.
I'm sure it was other people who were verified.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Carbonite is online backup made easy. Plans start at just $59.99 a year. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist to get 2 bonus months with purchase.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.